Bob Lucky, who's a name you probably have heard, actually, half mostly in jest, after he'd heard several speakers say coding is dead, he got up and said, well, data is dead too, or is it data are dead?
Right.
But that's the, so that was one theme. The on the wireless side, probably only NASA was really doing digital communication, and the military, very definitely. One reason for the military, and I kind of skipped over that, but there you have to have a signal that's immune or resistant to enemy, to hostile interference. Mm-hmm. So you go spread spectrum. As soon as you go spread spectrum, that means going digital.
Mm-hmm.
It hardly makes any sense to have an analog signal on a spread spectrum. So, although people have looked at it, but it's never been really practical. Whereas digital, it's less natural because the spreading is a digital waveform, and you just have a digital. You put your bit is about this big, and the spreading is hopping around very fast in order to spread the spectrum. So the military were certainly doing that even in the 50s and certainly more so in the 60s. And what really gave everything, both military and clearly space, was satellite communication, where now you were looking for efficiency. You were looking for systems that could transmit at very, very far away, geosynchronous ranges, which meant 40,000 kilometers. And all the technology for the military spread spectrum became even more important because the geosynchronous satellite is a sitting duck.
Hmm.
Anybody can jam it. And whereas on the ground, you know, you can sort of position your antenna and all that. And then, of course, NASA. And then a very big push came from commercial satellites, which initially, very, very beginning, were analog, but very quickly, by the 70s, were already digital.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say digital communication got a big push from satellite communication. In fact, you can almost trace some of the heritage from the digital satellite systems of the 60s and 70s into even some of the cellular systems in 90s. And I'm not talking about spread spectrum. I'm talking about things like TDMA, which had first been done on satellites for a very good reason, and then were kind of imported to cellular with much less justification.
And was it tough getting a business competing with a company like AT&T that had its own in-house research and development and a lot of experience?
Well, we weren't competing with AT&T at Linkabit. We were a military contractor. We were a very small military contractor from 1970, essentially, when we opened our first, we had a little office in L.A. in 69, but in 1970, right down the street here in Sorrento Valley, we got our first 4,000 square feet or so, and had 10 people, and went after little government contracts. So AT&T with Bell Labs and everything was doing its thing. They paid no attention to us, except that, yeah, from our academic days and from our professional reputation, we'd meet with a lot of folks from Bell Labs.
Mm-hmm.
I visited there a few times, gave a few lectures, but that was more from an academic viewpoint than any competitive technology. In fact, there was no such thing as, there was no such thing as IPR in those days. It was all marvelous. You didn't worry. In fact, on the algorithm, it's kind of interesting. We got a lawyer to incorporate the company. And shortly thereafter, we had some of this work from NASA and from the Navy, which was on the algorithm. So we went to that same lawyer, who was, in fact, a patent lawyer, and said, would you think we ought to patent this? It's ridiculous. This stuff is only good for government applications. And the government, you really have no protection. The government can do whatever they want. and which was an overstatement. It isn't quite totally true, but either that or he was very lazy. He didn't want to patent. But he convinced us that it wasn't worth spending the $3,000 or whatever to go to prepare a patent and go apply.